When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's quarters every week, right here on VolQuest. Hey, good Thursday, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane with Brent Hubbs, Grant Ramey, and we got a lot to get into here today. Big thanks to our friends Exterior Home Solutions for making this coverage possible. Free estimate, you can pick up the phone today and give them a call at 865-524-5888 or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local, they've been trusted since 1999. Again, big thanks to our friends Exterior Home Solutions. We got a whole lot of questions to get into today. As always, we thank you for sending those in. So without further ado, we'll start with Nash Fall 615. Who are the best no-name recruits in Tennessee history? Late additions, zero-star recruits, etc. Last few years, Santi, Zakai, and Cedric Tillman are up there for me. Brent, we'll start with you. Any football ones that come to mind that turned out to be all-stars?
Well, I mean, Cedric Tillman was nothing until Josh Heupel got here. So he would have been an afterthought in the conversation before the Josh Heupel administration and regime got here, because the only time he got on the field prior to that was when Tennessee was running a running play. But obviously the career he had at the end with Coach Heupel, he goes into that category. Probably the most noted one is Inky Johnson. You know, when Inky signed, his other option was the gray shirt at Georgia. Everybody was unsure because of his size and his academics. So that's as big of one of those as I've covered in terms of the no stars. I mean, when Tennessee took Ryan Carl from the mid-state, he was little known in the summertime. He finished, I think, a three-star player who had a good career at Tennessee. But in terms of late in the process, biggest no name, I think you got to put Inky Johnson in that conversation.
Grant, any from hoops that come to mind?
I mean, obviously it's Zakai Ziegler. I can vividly remember where I was sitting in my car and I saw Rob report that they were bringing him in for a visit, and if things went well, there's going to be an offer or whatever, and this could move fast. And I pulled up his profile and there was no picture on it. I don't think there was a ranking on it. I'd never heard of the kid. And I remember thinking to myself, because Tennessee had, at this point, had some projects that didn't go well, and I thought, you can't keep taking these projects and hoping it works out. And what they got is, I mean, the heart and soul of their program. I mean, Rick was talking about it Wednesday. Like, he just shows up, and they were going to redshirt him, and you can't redshirt him. He's too good. I mean, he's the front man on their defense that's never been ranked lower than the top three in KenPom. They're number three right now. They finished number three when he was a freshman, number one last year. The way he plays up the crowd and the kind of, I don't know, just everything about him, like heart and soul literally describes him. But he's just that guy. I mean, he's three-time all defensive team SEC. He's defensive player of the year this year. He tore his ACL the last home game last season, never missed a game this season. He's averaging career highs in minutes, field goal percentage, points, assists, steals, all that stuff. His numbers have only gone up. So, I mean, Tobey Waka is going to be good. He's another kind of no-name. In that same kind of vein as Ziegler, he's not going to be a Zakai, but I was thinking about with Dalton's career at senior day the other day and Josiah and Santi, you thought those were loud roars. A year from now, when Zakai Ziegler has his senior day, that's going to be a different level.
Let's go to Grover Levy. Over under 19.5 number of catches from Mike Matthews this season, Brent.
I'll take the over just because I have no idea.
Yes, do it. Have fun.
Speak it into existence, Grant Ramey. Just speak it into existence.
Read my mind. Let's have some fun. I want the 5-star freshman to catch some footballs. Let's go.
I'm down with that. We'll take the over because the over is always more fun than the under. A couple here from Athron. First one: when will we start recruiting true centers out of high school instead of these utility players The next center in the line has always been a problem for some reason due to this recruiting method. Recruiting true centers out of high school, Brent, when is Tennessee going to start doing that more or less?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of times your high school center is a guy who's probably not going to play college football and not going to play Power 5 college football because he's not the most physical guy in the world, not the biggest guy. He's probably a guy who just could snap the ball. And, hey, congratulations, you get a job because you can snap the ball. I mean, it happens in youth, right? I mean, it's not always the biggest center in youth ball. If the guy can snap a shotgun snap, it's your job. So I think that in most cases, if you look around the country, most centers were former high school guards. They're very few. They're not a ton of true centers, if you will. I mean, Jason Respert was a true center. I don't know that he played center much at Tennessee. Scott Wells was a center at Tennessee. Played a lot of guard, I think, in high school. Played center, too. I just think that you're taking the most physical guy. And anymore, you try him out in camp. And if they can snap in camp a little bit, then you go, okay, I can make that work, right? I can make him a center. I mean, James Stone wasn't a center. You know, they made him a center. And I think you see more of that than you do anything else. Was Jason Kelsey a center at Cincinnati, or was he I guess he was their center at Cincinnati, but I don't think he was coming out of high school.
He was a walk-on running back at the beginning of his career.
Jason Kelsey?
Yes. Does that sound right? I'm pretty sure he was a walk-on running back and then quickly made the move over to the offensive line. I'll double-check, but I'm pretty sure I've seen that before. He was a walk-on running back.
I don't know where he's from, but I feel bad for opposing defenses, high school defenses, if that kid was a running back in high school.
I agree. But anyway, my point being, I don't think it's a big deal. I think the bigger thing is you got to have a guy who is smart enough, who can handle it, who can process really fast because you're playing really fast. Now, what you have to do, and I mentioned this in the football primer I had on Wednesday, priority for this spring is finding a backup center. I mean, you can't go into fall camp and not know who your backup center is. You got to have an idea. Now, they tried to make Addison Nichols a backup center. It didn't work. If Vincent Lang's the center, you better know coming out of spring practice he's a center. So you better figure that out because, A, you need a backup for this year, and, two, you got to have somebody for 25. You don't want to have a bunch of open auditions with young players or even a transfer guy next spring. You want to find a center out of your collection of guards, and that's the challenge this spring.
From the trusted source of Wikipedia, former walk-on running back Kelsey switched to fullback and then finally to offensive line after redshirting his initial year at the University of Cincinnati. I knew I saw that somewhere. What a story.
I mean, there's a guy who's got a chance to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, maybe. We'll see what happens with, you know, after retirement here. And he was he wasn't a center. Yeah. He wasn't recruited as a center out of high school. So I don't think that's a big deal.
Hubs, forget about the Hall of Fame. He's gone from walk-on running back to brother-in-law Taylor Swift.
Some more here from Athrun. Who
I don't know
will
what
have
that
a
means. I don't know if that's a good thing, but it could mean a lot of money, right? A lot of free trips.
Who will have a light spring to give some younger guys some run over the next couple of weeks, Brent?
Cooper Mays. I mean, I wouldn't do a whole lot with Cooper Mays. I wouldn't do a whole lot with James Pierce. I would let Caleb Herring get a bunch of reps there. I think Keenan Peely needs a little bit of work, but I think you got to be careful with how much you want to work him and beat him up. Dylan Sampson some, but I want to see a lot of Cam Seldon and Deshaun Bishop. I mean, there's a lot riding on Cam Seldon, Grant Ramey. I mean, you're putting a lot of stock in a guy who has basically been a running back 1 year at the college level and played a limited amount a year ago. There's a lot on him. He needs to have a big spring. I think he's got to be a guy who gets a bunch of reps.
I like that name because you're expecting – you've kind of been spoiled a little bit, I think, with Jalen Wright taking the steps that he took year over year and Jabari Small and all those other guys in these running backs for him the last 3 years. That's improved steadily and progressed and made big year over year jumps. And, yeah, you're missing those, and you better find out who your number two is and how reliable he is. You better hope Cam Seldon's your number two. And he's somebody that you can rely on. You know what you're getting out of Dylan Sampson, but they're obviously not going to be a one-backfield like we've seen.
Will this team have a typical Rick Barnes tournaments where they go cold at the worst possible time?
Oh, boy. Can I have the soapbox? Can I get the soapbox from the Hubs?
Take it, man.
Get it out. Prop up on that thing.
Listen, enjoy whatever's left. okay? That's what I'm going to tell you. You could have 2 games of Dalton Connect left. You could have 9 games of Dalton Connect left. That's it. Dalton Connect in Cincy uniforms not going to last much longer. It could be another month. It could be another 2 weeks. We'll see what happens. But this is the best they've been situated offensively going into the tournament under Rick Barnes. They have the best score, point blank period, in college basketball on your team. The guy that, as Rick has said, is better than him with the lights on, or however Rick said it. I don't know. He's really, really good, and just enjoy it while it lasts. I mean, yeah, they could have a 59-point loss and everybody's nightmare scenario happens. You know, Fairleigh Dickinson beats Purdue and FAU goes to the Final Four and Loyola goes to the Final Four. You never know what's going to happen in this tournament. St. Peter's goes to the Elite Eight as a 15 seed. They are situated better. They've proven they can win in different ways. But don't live with the cloud over your head of, is this team going to go cold at the wrong time? Just enjoy it, because they're really good offensively and their defense hasn't fallen off at all. So they got 3 really good basketball players in Dalton, Zakai, and Jonas. Those need to be your big 3 night in, night out. See what Santi and Joe can give you. You got better depth. Just enjoy it however long it lasts, while it lasts.
Grant, we'll stay with you and talk some hoops here. This is from Oshwarb. Is Barnes recruiting Briarcrest sophomore Fred Smith? He was the MVP of the state championship game, going for 29 points, 15 rebounds, only a sophomore. Any other names for late signing period for next year? Only have Boswell, and that's it for the freshman coming in.
I don't know about Fred at that early of a stage in terms of a sophomore. I also don't know what build he is and kind of what he looks like as a basketball player, other than those are pretty good numbers you're putting up in a state title game. Prospects, I would be surprised to join Bishop Boswell in this class. There's always chances, like we talked about with Zakai, where it's late in the process and he didn't sign and commit until August. So there's always guys that they're going to look at guys, and if they think they're worth taking, they'll go take them. But I think the emphasis, as it should be in the spring, is going to be on the transfer portal and multiple spots there that you need to fill. When you start looking at that roster next year, you're going to need a big, you're going to need another scoring guard. There's not going to be another Dalton Connect out there. You're going to have to kind of come back down to reality after this experience, but you're going to have to find some offense there. And when you, assuming you have Jonas and Zakai back, you build around those pieces. I think you need a scorer, and I think you need a big man. I think you need to focus on the portal there, try to have some more success out of the portal.
Grant, I'm curious about this. I mean, for years we saw kind of a trend growing a little bit about guys reclassifying. Does the transfer portal slow down the guys graduating a year early, to bumping up in a class, but because a coach is not pushing to, hey, reclassify, we need you now, because he can go find what he needs in the portal? Or do you think that they're mutually exclusive, it doesn't have an effect on either one?
I would think you would slow it down because of how much of an emphasis that there is on the portal. I mean, you look around the SEC, Dalton Connect at Tennessee, Antonio Reeves at Kentucky, Jani Broom at Auburn, the list goes on. Those are all portal guys. Those are all guys who have come in, and they're some of the best players in the league, and they're all the NCAA transfer portal. And I think that's where, if you have a guy that you think could reclass and help you immediately, then go ahead and reclass and help you immediately. And they can start getting NIL payments and all that stuff once they get to campus. But I think such an emphasis is on the portal, and that's the way you're going to you've seen these quick turnarounds. It doesn't take a 3-year turnaround for the right coach who can execute in the portal the right way to rebuild that roster. So I think it slows it down because you're trying to build out of the portal first and probably prep prospects second.
Let's go next to Southerner 98, kind of a big picture question here. Could you ever see players holding out playing a specific game for more money? I could imagine the morning of a huge game, a star quarterback asking for a big increase, and there really isn't anything in place to keep that from happening. Brent, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I guess anything's possible. I just think if you do that, I mean, that's like going on a strike. I mean, I think you lose so much if you're willing to take. I mean, it's kind of like if you go in and ask your boss for a raise, you better have another job, because the boss might tell you, "Ah, we're good." So it's a dangerous game to play. Because what if you do that and a coach doesn't play you, and comes out and tells everybody, "Well, I didn't play him because he came in and he wanted more money, or he wasn't going to suit up today." Now where's your value? Now where are you at? What are you worth? You know what I mean? Listen, players have leverage. They should have leverage. There's also too much leverage. Okay. At some point in time, some guys are going to have to be told no. Okay. I think at Ole Miss, the Junkins kid went to Ohio State because Ole Miss said no. You know, I mean, I think that this is the next stage of self-policing. Look, we can go to Capitol Hill. How many times has the NIL discussion been on Capitol Hill in the last year and a half? I mean, we've taken collectives, you've taken ADs, you've taken presidents, you've taken former coaches. The natural governance, the kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but the way it's governed without rules, without hard rules in place, is by people telling other people no. Right? Okay, I think I'm worth this. We don't think you are. Go find another place. Hope you got it right. You don't want to do that with everybody, but I think that's the next step in this thing, and because it's not an unlimited amount of money, which means you should not have an unlimited amount of leverage. Now, the problem is, Grant, coaches aren't told no very often. I need a new analyst. Okay, we'll find that in the budget. I need a plane to go see a recruit that's, you know, playing in a game we didn't know about. I need it in 30 minutes. Okay, we'll get it for you. We need this. We need that. Okay, we'll get it. At some point, the coaches also have to be told, guys, it's the value's not there. We're not paying for it. Now, that's going to be hard for fans, right? That's going to be really hard for fans. We saw it in the NFL this week, right? Titans fans aren't happy because Derrick Henry's gone, you know? But that's the business. And I think that if you're going to run this college thing like a business, some of that's going to have to come into play. There's my soapbox, Grant Ramey.
I mean, I think if you're going to run it like a business, you need multi-year contracts to control some of this stuff like a business is ran. Has it happened on a day of a game? I wouldn't be surprised if it's happened. I don't know if it's happened myself personally. I don't know of any such cases. But, I mean, anything and everything can happen now because of what Hubs is talking about right there. There's no rules. It's the wild, wild west. Guys have leverage, and they can use that leverage how they see fit. But I think at the end of the day, and I've heard people talking about this, where it's just like any other business where it's going to have to get down to schools have multi-year contracts for players and X amount of money and a scholarship to go with it. And if you break that contract, then whatever the language of that contract is happens. I mean, but until then, yeah, I could see that happening just because of how kind of insane it is right now, honestly.
We'll go next to Sam Smith, 2233. Couple of baseball questions. Do we see A.J. Russell out of the arm barn this weekend, or do they start him Sunday and have Snead piggyback him? Yeah, either one. I could see both of those happening now. Thought that he was going to pitch on Tuesday. Turns out he was just going to throw a bullpen, and everything seems to have gone well from that, from everything I've heard. And you know, Tony Vitello said after the game on Tuesday that he doesn't know exactly when it's going to happen, but they expect to get him in this series against Alabama. So I would say, you know, at some point on Friday or Saturday, likely coming out of the bullpen. If not before then, you know, I could definitely see him opening a game on Sunday, pitching an inning or two. But he's not at the point now to where he can throw 70 pitches and go five innings or whatever the case is. The goal was to get him back by SEC play. He will be back in some fashion, and then he'll just continue to extend out. But I do think it's kind of a play by ear. And, you know, if there's a chance you can go in there and you need a lockdown inning or two, maybe you see Russell is as early as Friday night. We'll have to see. Who do you trust the most out of the arm barn besides Nate Snead? Well, when Causey's in the bullpen, I trust him. Trust Chris Stamos. And it was good to see him get back out there on Tuesday. Man, you've seen a lot of Andrew Beanke and Dylan Loy. Dylan Loy, a true freshman. He's probably the freshman MVP so far. Andrew Beanke and Loy both have done some good things. You'll want to say that about Marcus Phillips, but he's kind of been too hot and cold, and he was cold on Tuesday. Kirby has looked really good this year. I know he got roughed up. I think his second appearance last week, he got kind of roughed up, but I think overall he's looked pretty good. But if you know, Snead's look incredible, and when Causey's in the bullpen, he looks really good. Ben Hess is a dude. Outside of him, thoughts on this Alabama team? This Alabama team's pretty good, ranked 14th in the country. You mentioned Hess, of course. They've got another starting pitcher that's looked really, really good so far. Greg Ferrone, Zane Adams has done some things. Aiden Moses started some games. You know, Gage Miller, I believe he's the third baseman. He kind of leads the team in average and home runs and RBI. You know, Eblen, McCants, they got some transfers. I mean, it's a really well-rounded club. Like Tennessee, almost every starter, kind of their routine everyday lineup is hitting over 300 except for one player. Good hitting team, good pitching team. I'll have more on the preview and, of course, on the porch, but it's a pretty good, well-rounded Alabama baseball team, kind of looking at it first glance, and, of course, I'll dive down more deep into it. In your expert basketball opinion, will the committee have two brackets ready for if Tennessee wins on Sunday and one if they don't, or is it hay in the barn Saturday night no matter what? My opinion is it's hay in the barn Saturday night, but I'm not a basketball junkie. Grant, you take over. You know, SEC's really at a disadvantage, in my opinion, playing the championship game on Sunday because it feels like a lot of the time it doesn't matter, as was the case for Tennessee 2 years ago.
Hang on, we got a caller on the show, Brent Hubbs from Coryton. Go ahead, Hubbs.
I just have one question before we get – this is the basketball question. It's a good one to answer. But what is this term arm barn? Like, where did that come from? Like,
Never heard this?
No, I haven't never heard. I mean, it's a bullpen. Why is it? I mean, why would you?
No, the bullpen's offensive, Brent. You can't say bullpen anymore. PETA doesn't want you to say bullpen. It's arm barn.
Okay. I do remember that.
Well, I've been in a few bullpens, but it's not been to throw a baseball. So, and I was not offended. I was a little nervous, but I wasn't offended being in that bullpen. Continue on. I had no idea.
Sam is calling it an arm barn, ironically. But yes, that was something a couple years ago because apparently it's offensive now. Grant, okay. Go ahead.
I'm sorry if I've offended someone by phrasing the term bullpen.
You've offended me.
Hubs has been in a hog barn. He's not been in an arm barn.
Exactly right.
Will the committee have two sets of brackets Saturday night? It would make sense to have two sets of brackets. I think it depends on how the weekend plays out. Tennessee flames out on Friday and North Carolina advances in the ACC tournament. That's a different story. If North Carolina flames out on Friday and Tennessee advances in the SEC tournament. But there's been it's hard to tell if conference tournaments matter because you hear two different things. Lenardi was talking 2 years ago when Tennessee won the thing and they didn't move up to a number two seed that, you know, conference tournaments don't mean all that much. Now this year you're going in with three established locks in the number one seed, UConn, Purdue, and Houston. And then you have Tennessee and North Carolina. And it feels like Tennessee has the advantage entering the week, but it's pretty close. It's close enough to not really know what's going to happen on Sunday. So it's going to be a kind of a good test of does this stuff matter or not. I think it's more than anything a sign to the SEC, especially with Texas and Oklahoma coming into the league, and you're going to be redoing the tournament a little bit anyway in the format and all that stuff. To if you can get out of Sunday, get out of Sunday and get it on Saturday and start the thing on Tuesday or whatever. If that's a TV deal or whatever's going on there, do what you got to do to move this thing to Saturday so that when the committee does put most of the bracket together Saturday night, they know what they're looking at with the SEC. Because number one seeds are a big deal, especially for Tennessee. Tennessee's never been one. They've been a number two, I think, two or three times. So this is a big deal, and it hurts you if you advance to Sunday and win the thing, and it doesn't help you with a bracket. But if Tennessee gets to Sunday and shows itself well in the SEC tournament, I think it's going to be hard to keep them out of a number one seed because it feels like they have a slight advantage to start championship week. Now, North Carolina has got the blue blood advantage, so who knows there, and we'll see what kind of bias there is there or anything like that.
Grant, do you feel like that the SEC has more teams that can move in terms of seeding in their conference tournament than other conferences? I look at the ACC, somebody's got to be a Cinderella to get in, right? But then you look at what the potential quarterfinal games could be on Friday in the SEC. I mean, those are legit NCAA tournament teams. Could the conference tournament matter more to the bracketologist in the SEC because of the depth of this conference and where they're at? I mean, if Kentucky makes the finals on Sunday, they're moving up, right? I mean, they're not staying where they're at seeded wise, given the way they finished the regular season. And if they make a run in the tournament, you see what I'm saying? I mean, does the SEC have more room to move in the tournament than anybody else does conference wise?
100%. At least I've just been focusing on the ACC because of that Tennessee, North Carolina discussion. And I think Virginia is the three seed in the ACC, and they're going to have to do something to make the NCAA tournament. Like that's how bad, or that's how down the ACC has been. On the other hand, Tennessee Friday could play Mississippi State. That could be a quad one win, if I'm not mistaken, if Tennessee does get Mississippi State and does win that game. And then if you get Auburn on Saturday, obviously that's a quad one. And whoever you got on Sunday, if you get to Sunday, would be a quad. Like there's a ton more opportunities And it's not just Tennessee. It's Alabama. It's Auburn. It's Kentucky. It's Florida that was an 11 seed 4 weeks ago, and now they're looking at a 6 or a 5 seed. They're a completely different team. So, yeah, the depth of this league. I mean, Tennessee could get on Friday, Mississippi State, the only SEC team it didn't beat during the regular season. I think that speaks to the depth of the league, too, that it's going to be tough regardless. But there are more opportunities for sure for Tennessee, for other SEC teams to change the seating, which is, I think, more evidence for me to move this tournament, get it on Saturday, the championship game on Saturday, and go from there.
We'll use this as a transition, but last thing, I went back and dug it up. October 28, 2021, from the PETA Twitter account. Bullpen refers to the area of the bull's pen where bulls are held before they are slaughtered. It's a word that's not good, and we can do better than that. Switching to arm barn would be a home run for baseball fans, players, and animals.
Because so nothing's ever happened to an animal in a barn, ever.
There ever. You go.
Said anyone, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right.
History lesson.
We are going to take a short break here, and then, of course, we're gonna get into the rest of your questions. I do want to give a shout-out to our friends over at Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen, chef-cutted, dietitian-approved, ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every single week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto. Also, there's more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up, feeling good all day long. What are you waiting on? Go ahead and get started today, and you can reach your goals. Two-minute meals, fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat, eat, and whenever and wherever you are. Pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, dinner, and more. Plus, they're flexible with your schedule. You get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every single week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Plus, it doesn't take long at all, guys. 2 minutes, ready to go. They've sent me a couple, and I enjoy eating those for lunch throughout the week. You can, too, as well. If you head on over to factormeals.com/VQ50, use the promo code VQ50 to get 50% off. That's promo code VQ50 at factormeals.com/VQ50 for 50% off. That's over at factormeals.com. And as always, a big thank you to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for making this podcast possible.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
A big thanks, as always, to our friends Exterior Home Solution. Give them a call for a free estimate. They will help you out. All right, back into the mailbag questions. We'll go to Reltney for Life. He's got a two-parter. We'll go football first. Which veteran football players will be out for spring ball, Brent Hubbs?
Well, Brew McCoy's not going to go. I don't know that you consider Elijah Herring a veteran, but he's out after having a shoulder procedure taken care of. Spraggins should be able to go, should be fine. Weathersby should be good to go. Peely, they're going to limit, but he should be able to go. Otherwise, I think I'm sure I'm missing somebody, but I think they're, for the most part, solid in terms of where they are health-wise. There'll be guys on maintenance days. I mean, they're going to be smart with veteran guys. They're not going to take any chances on beating anybody up for no reason or getting some guy in a pile for no reason. So that's where, I mean, Trevor Duncan was a guy who was out at the end of the last year, but he should be good to go. He's going to work on the offensive line this spring at tackle.
Robinson.
Yeah, he's good to go. Nathan's good to go coming off his deal. We'll see where Brian Grant is. He was a guy that was hurt. I don't know how healthy he is with the foot injury he's dealt with. So there'll be a couple of guys like that. But in terms of veterans, I mean, you're talking about Brew McCoy is the biggest name.
And not a veteran, but an early enrollee freshman, Peyton Lewis, is not going to be going through to spring, right?
Yep, that's correct. He's out after having a couple cleanup procedures done for him. So he will miss out. But otherwise, I think they're all right.
All right, a baseball question. Tony Vitello gives you the pencil to set the offensive lineup for Friday versus Bama. Do you go with A, Dreiling, Inslee, and Tears in the outfield, or Dreiling, Tears, and either Bargo, Chapman, or somebody else? My outfield for this week on Friday, especially with the way Hunter Inslee's been hitting the last two games, he's kind of started to kind of come alive. I would go Dreiling in left field, Hunter Ensley in center field, plays really good defense. And then I go Tears in right field, and I would have Robin as your designated hitter. Who's your designated hitter? Robin. Who's behind the plate? Cannon Peebles. I know it might seem like Cal Stark's catching a lot. I mean, he's going to get about a start every single weekend, but Cannon's going to make more starts behind the plate when it's all said and done. We'll move on now to Dalval 5. Brent, we have seen multiple coaches, Stoops, Drinkwitz, Beamer, even Dabo, make seemingly unprompted, very public comments about our program that seem rare in today's media environment since Heupel. Why is this? Are these coaches just immature, scared? Is there something specific in the program that isn't consistent with, you know, getting this reaction? What? Why are they having these comments?
Well, I mean, I think you go back to year one and you look at what happened with Beamer. I mean, they got clobbered in Knoxville, you know, and I don't think they were happy about what, you know, getting clobbered. And Tennessee doesn't take a knee. They don't take the foot off the gas. So then the next year, you know, the Beamer clobbers Tennessee and that bizarre game where Hendon Hooker got hurt, you know, and Cabal Haddon had talked junk on the sideline the entire game to the South Carolina sideline. And Beamer was emotional and, you know, said what he said. I mean, but here's the thing. I mean, Josh Heupel's not dead and Shane Beamer's crosshairs, right? I mean, he said something about Stoops. He said something about Dabo Swinney. I mean, he's talked about everybody. Beamer has. Stoops is not held back from anybody. I mean, Drinkwitz could say anything at any point in time to anybody. So I don't know that it's, man, they got a target on Tennessee's back. I mean, I don't think they like getting hammered the way they did the first couple of years, Grant. But I don't think this is this vendetta against – I mean, I think those guys are not afraid to talk about anybody out there for whatever reason. They seem very unpolitical in a world of media – coaches in the media who like to say nothing.
I think you want it that way, though. You don't want – I mean, how many times did Nick Saban say Butch Jones is a great coach and is going to have a great future at Tennessee, or Derek Dooley, like those votes of confidence from other coaches? I don't know if you want, like, you can run a respectable program, people still not like the style of play and, you know, scores from past games or whatever those situations are. And Hubs is 100% right on, they keep their foot on the gas and they don't take it off regardless of what the scoring situation is. And that can rub some people the wrong way. But I mean, if you're pissing people off, I think you're doing something right. I think that's what you want. You're winning games and it beats the alternative.
The yeah. Best one of those ever was Rick Pitino calling it a travesty that Wade Houston got fired after a 5-22 season. It was a travesty. It was a travesty to the SEC and to college basketball that Wade Houston was fired. That's the proverbial, whatever the other coach says matters not. Okay. That from that point on in my world, whatever an opposing coach said about another coach matters not. That's not truly what they think. And if they're giving you an endorsement, and most of them aren't going to give you their true feelings, those coaches mentioned in this question have given their true feelings about some people.
Yeah, and this thank is a separate you. Conversation. Thank you, Rick. Go ahead, Grant.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Rick Pitino, the moral tone setter.
I was going to say this is a separate conversation, but in my opinion, if you are running your offense and trying to score in the fourth quarter up by 30 with your third string quarterback, let that third-string quarterback go and score. Because you know why? It's a third-string quarterback. That's just my opinion.
I agree. But how many third-string quarterbacks have we seen in the fourth quarter?
Oh, we see them get in there for a couple of plays because, you know, the starters got to play until
there you go.
Midway through the third. Andrew Aiken says, can a defensive line player ever be as versatile enough to play strong side defensive end and both defensive tackle spots, or Leo and strong defensive end? Seems like Tyree West and Hobbs would be the kind of guy that would do the former, any Leos that could do the latter. Brent, I agree with the poster in saying this. There's guys like Jason Jenkins, Hobbs, Tyree Weathersby that could bump inside. And, of course, pass rushing situations, that's a package. But there's some guys that can play defensive tackle and that five technique, that strong side defensive end if needed, versatility. There aren't many guys, at least that we've seen here under Josh Heupel and Tim Banks, that will play the Leo position and then we'll flip over and play that other spot unless it's a pass rushing package where they have two Leos on the field.
Yeah, and I think that's going to continue to be that way. I mean, you know, unless you just have a rash of injuries and you're just stuck, I don't think anybody has a plan to play a 230-pound guy as their strong side defensive end if they can avoid it. And you should recruit to the point where you can avoid that and not have that happen.
We seem to be recruiting the skilled guys on both sides of the ball pretty well. Do you think we close better with some of the elite offensive linemen and defensive linemen prospects? I know AP and Matt aren't on this, but Brent, it feels like at least the net has been casted wider in terms of the pool of elite prospects on the line of scrimmage, specifically offensive line here in this class of 25.
Yeah, I think they're in a much better spot with some offensive linemen right now than they have been. We'll see what that defensive line looks like as it kind of emerges, because I think they're going to have to end up being in the portal for some defensive linemen because of all that they lose this year. But they've got to recruit some high school guys as well. So we'll see what that looks like. But I think if you just look at the offensive tackle position, there's definitely a wider net. They're not banking on one or two guys. They're in pretty deep with a half dozen guys, which is where you need to be if you're going to sign two or three tackles.
All right, UTC Vols says, how much longer until Rick Barnes retires? Over, under 5 years, Grant?
I'd probably go under. Because of where the college game's heading and all the stuff Nick Saban's been saying, I don't know that Rick feels that way or whatever. But me, personally, just thinking about the roster reconstruction year in and year out that's going to be required, especially in college basketball. And, you know, you got 13 scholarships guys and, you know, some leave for the NBA and others transfer, and it feels like you're just going to be starting over almost every single season. And that's exhausting just thinking about it. I mean, you can think about the roster next season in terms of the guys leaving, Joe, Santi, Dalton. You can think about possible portal guys that you're worried about. You can think about, you know, you got to go out and find new guys. Like, it's hard, I think, to start over every single year. And I think that could get exhausting. I've long felt that Rick would be awful in retirement and terribly bored because he likes to coach basketball and tinker with his basketball program nonstop. And that's where his mind goes constantly. And if you try to talk about anything off topic, he's just all over the place, like a toddler's attention span. So I don't know. But at some point, where the game's headed, I feel like it's for the younger coaches and the guys that are willing to rebuild their rosters every single year. I've thought more about how long does Rick have left, I guess, at this point than I have previously because of kind of where the game's headed.
And then when he does retire eventually, do you think Tennessee would stay within the Rick Barnes tree with some of these coaches that have been here and gone on to become head coaches elsewhere during his tenure?
I think it depends on how it plays out and when it plays out, what point in the year it plays out. If it's the spring, if it's something later in the cycle where he decides he just doesn't want to do it anymore. I mean, he's always said that he'll do it until he stops having fun. But there, at the same time, with the level of success in this program that's been sustained pretty consistently throughout his time here, basically since that 2017-18 season, I don't know which of his assistants would come here and be able to sustain that and go on. Obviously, Kim English has had a lot of success going from George Mason to Providence, and he's trying to get that team in the NCAA tournament his first year there. Mike Schwartz is still getting started in East Carolina. Rob Lanier's at SMU, still kind of trying to get started there himself. So I think it's a question of how much pull would Rick have in the next hire and how much pull would he want to have in the next hire, and would Danny White want to go out and do his own thing, because he's hired basketball coaches before, and obviously he's had success making hires there. So I think it's just a matter of which direction Danny White wants to go in terms of making his own hire or trying to stay in that coaching tree and all that stuff.
And this job would be a better job than it's probably ever been. When you look at it, I mean, when Bruce Pearl left, you had the NCAA stuff, and I know that was on Pearl, but you had some rebuilding and you had a lot of mending to do there. When obviously they got rid of Donnie Tindall, they go hire Rick Barnes, and it was a mess after 1 year of Donnie Tindall. I mean, this is as stable and as much of a firm foundation as this program has been on in a long, long time. Maybe ever, when you look at, you know, where Rick has it right now, whenever that retirement day comes, makes the job a different job.
Yeah, I think it's 100% in one of the best spots it's ever been in. To think that Rick was the third coach in 3 years when he took this job, and what he had to, how much rebuilding he had to do, I guess, from the previous two coaching staffs. The fact that they've won, 27 2 years ago, 25 last year, they're starting the postseason 24-7 this year. They've won 76 games and counting in a three-year run. They won 57 back-to-back years, that 17, 18, 18, 19. So the sustained success they've had, it's going to be a very attractive job whenever it is open because of what Rick's done and how he's been able to build it and keep it going.
Vulcan asks, obviously Tennessee's been extremely lucky across all sports, net gain loss in the transfer portal, Hendon Hooker, Heisman contender, Dalton Kinect, a consensus All-American, etc. I assume Chase Burns is the biggest loss across all sports at Tennessee to the transfer portal. Who across all sports is second in your opinion? If you want to reach beyond that, go ahead. Yeah, Brent, I would imagine just off the top of my head that Chase Burns is definitely the number one. Anybody come to mind as being the number two right now?
You know, when the late Aaron Douglas transferred, I mean, he was a starter off of that team with Lane Kiffin, and he transferred and ended up going to Alabama. I mean, that was a significant loss because he was the guy you were going to anchor your offensive line around. I can't think of a quarterback that they've lost that. They've lost some guys they had committed, but in terms of guys that they had signed and locked in that were here, right? Can't count Taj Boyd and those guys that got cut. I'm sure I'm missing somebody in football that went on to do something, a tailback somewhere that transferred out and went on to do something. Right off the top of my head, I can't, you know, in terms of guys leaving, it doesn't jump out to me right now, but I'm sure I'm missing somebody in football.
Anybody come to mind for you, Grant?
Basketball, no. It feels like the guys that have left the program, at least in the Barnes era, the teams that I've covered, they've transferred out and they've found kind of where they should be. I mean, Drew Pember's been the conference player of the year in his conference at UNC Asheville because he's a really good basketball player. Right, twice, back-to-back years. And if he stayed at Tennessee, he would have been a good player. I don't think he'd been what he was at UNC Asheville because it's just two different levels. Tika Gaines went to George Mason with Kim English, and now he's at Providence. He's turned into a good basketball player. A good in the Big East, obviously, is a high-level basketball. So maybe Tika Gaines is a guy that if he stuck around, he'd be a good versatile piece for this basketball team. And you need guys like him. But like Corey Walker went to South Florida. He's a role player. Other guys that have left the program have kind of, you know, Chris Ledlam he was here for 2 weeks, and he went to St. John's. He's been a decent player, a guy that's, you know, whatever, 8-6 or whatever he can get you. So it feels like, yeah, what the poster said, a net positive. They've gotten a lot more out of the portal than they've lost through the portal, I think.
Goes on to ask, where would this baseball team be ranked if Chase Burns doesn't leave? Would we be talking about something comparable to 2022? Just in terms of rank, and you know, maybe you didn't mean about this, but like, I mean, Tennessee's number five right now. I don't see them being ranked any higher than number five that Chase Burns was on this team. But obviously, Chase Burns is a really good player. I know that he's looking good as the Saturday guy for Wake right now. He was elite, absolutely elite in the Tennessee bullpen last year, but we know he can start as well. Yeah, having Chase Burns on this team would help certainly because that 2022 team was dominant and you know, in a lot of areas and Chase Burns, I think, can be dominant at times. So yeah, I mean, it would help certainly, but I mean, Tennessee's number five in the country right now. And I know you start SEC play this weekend. We'll see how all that goes, but Chase Burns will certainly help. But right now I don't see them being, you know, viewed any differently in my opinion right now, if he was on this team, because Tennessee's pretty, you know, thought of pretty well right now. Let's go to Pine. Which room has the most competition this spring? Wide receivers trying to get into the top 3-4, linebackers of the new coach and no clear starters, safety. Keenan Peely is a clear starter. Safeties with two starting spots up for grabs. Which one's more competitive right now, Brent?
Well, I've got to go wide receiver because I know who the bodies are competing, you know, at that spot. I mean, when you're talking about you brought in a transfer in Brazel. You brought in two pretty highly acclaimed high school kids that showed up in bowl practice. Now, I don't put a whole lot of stock in a week of bowl practice, but those guys have made some noise, you know, this winter as well. Then you're bringing back Brew McCoy, you Squirrel White, and then you've got Nimrod, you got Caleb Webb. So I think you've got more bodies there that have played. And you kind of know what you have as a potential rotation there, and you don't rotate heavily there. So I think that one's highly competitive. Safety, I mean, who are the four safeties competing right now? Right? You got Jacoby Thomas, who's the kid who transferred in from MTSU. You got Turrentine. Then I guess you got John Slaughter. I mean, Christian Charles coming off an Achilles. I don't know how much he's going to go and do. You're moving Christian Harrison to there. We haven't seen what he can do at that spot. Who
Farouk
else?
Farouk Gorey.
You know, I mean, you've got you've got the kid as a walk on who's got experience, who Will Brooks, who's going to play, you know, be a factor and play back there. But I can give you six wide receivers. I can't give you six safeties. That's kind of my point of where that's at. So that's why I would go with the wide receiver spot. That outside linebacker spot will be really interesting to see what they do there. Who all is an outside linebacker in this system, and what is Inge looking for there? Are all those guys, you know, middle guys that he's trying to create some competition at the outside linebacker spot? I think that remains to be seen because, look, I think Keenan Peely is going to start, but then where does Herring play? Where does T-Lander play? How do you rotate there? Can one of those guys move outside and play? It seems probably unlikely, but we'll see what that looks like. You know, where's Caleb Perry factor in? I think there's bodies there, but I think there's more unknown schematically exactly what they're looking for out of those linebackers with Coach Inge and how he wants to play it within Banks' system that we got to figure out and see what that is this spring.
Speaking of a couple of those names you just mentioned, this is from Rocky Top Boy. I like this question. Which Christian will have the biggest impact in the secondary next year? Christian Charles, Christian Conyer, Christian Harrison?
I don't know. I mean,
it's a really good question.
It is. I mean, if Christian Conyer is going to stay at corner, I think right now there's at least two guys ahead of him, and Ricky Gibson and Jerron McCoy. You know, could he be the third corner? I mean, maybe we'll see where he is when where Jordan Matthews is, you know, and we'll see what that looks like with those guys. Christian Harrison's going to work at safety. I've not seen him at safety, so I don't know how big of a factor he can be there. That might be a home run land for him. It might not be. You know, we'll have to see. And Christian Charles has got to get through 15 days of practice. He's got to get through healthy before I think you can bank on a whole lot of him being a factor because he just hasn't been able to stay healthy.
Which Jordan will have the most impact in the secondary next year?
Michael.
Jordan Thomas. Say what?
Michael.
Jordan Thomas or Jordan Matthews? Much like Christian Charles, man, Jordan Thomas, who I think is a good player, he's got to stay healthy. That he has had so many injury concerns the last couple of years. But if he's healthy, it's Jordan Thomas, but that's the caveat. Can he stay healthy? So who would y'all say, Thomas or Matthews?
Grant, I think this is going to be interesting because I think Jordan Thomas is the nickel. Unless Boo Carter's really, really good as a freshman. You know, could Boo Carter bump Jordan Thomas out? If he does Jordan Thomas go to safety where he's practiced some before? But then you have the caveat of can he stay healthy? If he can stay healthy, I think he's one of Tennessee's best five defensive backs, Grant. We'll have to see.
When I was reading the question, out of those five names, the three Christians, the two Jordans, I think Jordan Thomas is the name that jumped out the most. Because I agree with others. I do think he's one of your five best. And the nickel stuff, and it's gonna. I think it'd be hard for Boo Carter to come in and take that job, just to be honest. I think he's a really good athlete and a really good football player, but that's a pretty tough task to come in and take a job like that. We'll see what happens. But out of those five, Jordan with the U, Jordan Thomas, his name jumped out the most to me.
Last question, and this one's going to be kind of all over the place. We can kind of walk through it a little bit. It's from Gator Dog. Rate every football position group better or worse compared to last year. No wait and see. Rate based on your opinion on 3/13/24. Well, they're about to start spring practice, and we'll have a whole lot more opinions on April.
Gator, I'm going to wait and see. Okay, 19. So you're not going to like my answer. If you want to re-ask it in 2 weeks, I'll have a much better answer for you then. I've got a lot of wait and see right now because listen, the month of January and February is really important for building muscle and strength. You do some football things, but it's not playing football. And so there's going to be a lot of wait and see with some of this stuff. I mean, I don't know what the linebackers are going to look like with William Inge, right? Keenan Peely's back. They should be more talented. Aaron Beasley had an okay year. I think the linebackers group should be really good if they can stay healthy. But you got to see some guys first because you're talking about some transfers helping, like in the secondary, for example. Eric, I mean, if McCoy and Thomas are hits in the transfer portal, okay, I like them in the secondary. I got to see if they hit first. I don't know. They run around, look pretty, and they're strong, but let's see what kind of football they play.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's going to be wait and see because they literally hadn't started the spring practice. But I'll tell you two position groups right now that I think that I'll be pretty confident saying that they're going to be better this year than last year. And that's not to say that other position groups won't, but I mean, like, I think the D-line's a wash. I think the D-line was good last year. I think the D-line's going to be good this year. But linebackers, like you were saying, simply because Pelee was hurt all year and Aaron Beasley would play banged up all year long and Elijah Herring was learning on the fly and then you had freshmen. I mean, I think the linebacker group is going to be better easily this year. And I think the wide receivers are going to be better easily this year because, boy, was that group a disappointment last year. Yeah, Squirrel White was good.
Part of that's the guy throwing the ball a little bit.
I agree. It's all tied in a little bit, but
how different are you? You
know? But I going back to you were talking about competition with six different guys, I think easily the wide receivers can bounce back this year and be much better than where they were last year. So those are my two that I feel confident about right now. Grant, you want to add anything?
We better say quarterback's going to be better so that guy didn't accuse us of carrying water in the next Monday night chat for Joe last year. No offense, Joe, but I like Nico's upside a little bit more. So I think quarterback could be better. I think wide receiver could be better. I think running back, that's tough right there because you're losing Jalen Rout. I think he's going to be a really good running back in Tennessee. I think he's going to be a really good NFL running back. You're losing a lot of talent there. And you had Dylan Sampson in the fold last year, and now you're leaning on him. So you're going to have to see what you have behind him. So it's going to be hard to be better at running back, in my opinion, even though I love Dylan Sampson. The ceiling that guy has and versatility and kind of the top-end stuff, we just have to see it as with him as the main guy.
Hey, Eric, can we ask one more before we go out the door? I know we're running late, but let's get NWGA Vols question in here. Thoughts on Nick Saban's comments on Capitol Hill? Does the Tennessee Brass support revenue sharing model for student athletes? I think all college people, whether that's administrators as ADs or chancellors or presidents, I think all of them are very interested in a revenue share model and what that looks like, because that gives them some control of the wild, wild west. Now, I think Grant, getting to that point is that you're running through hoops, you're jumping through barbed wire fences. I mean, It is a long way to get to that point. But I think ultimately everybody in some form or fashion at the administrator level is a believer in a revenue share model for the long-term stability of college athletics.
I could not get past the Nick's comments on the rich getting richer and the poor getting poor. I mean, it's like Willy Wonka complaining about chocolate being made. Like, you are the king of the rich getting richer and the poor getting poor. Like, no program got richer than your program over the last – nobody made college football more one-sided than Alabama with the success they had over the last however many years Saban was there. I mean, I couldn't believe that, really, honestly, because that's just – that's what he was the rich getting richer. And that's what Alabama was the last 15, 17, however many years he was there, and the championships they had. And revenue sharing sounds great in theory, but the distance you have to go to get there and all the other stuff you're trying to sort through on the way there makes it feel like a distant thing, because you have so much stuff you have to handle in the here and now and figure out and wrap your arms around. Because it feels like it's still in the very infant stages of this whole thing and trying to figure out how to regulate it or not regulate it, or, you know, figure out a way to live with it, I guess. And that just feels like so far down the road with other stuff they've got to figure out first.
And it brings all the other sports into play too, when you're revenue sharing at the university level. And that creates a different set of challenges. That's very different than what we're talking about in the NIL world right now. I mean, NIL is a first world football problem with some basketball sprinkled in, a little baseball here and there, but that's about it. Okay. When you start getting into the revenue share, Eric, then you're getting into everybody. And now you're in a whole different landscape of a whole different, a lot of different things. So I think everybody likes it and likes the thought of it, but the map to get there, I don't think anybody's got a plan or got a route, you know, figured out on how to get there. And land that plane safely, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds great in theory, but what are the steps you're going to take to actually get there over the next couple of years? It'll be intriguing to watch. Big thank you to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for sponsoring this VolQuest podcast. They put East Tennessee community first. They're rooted in trust, are the first choice for rooting and exterior home renovations. You can pick up the phone and get a free estimate by calling the phone number 865-524-5888 or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Tennessee.com. Big thank you to everybody who sent in questions this week. We got through a lot of them. Didn't get all of them, but got through a lot of them. I appreciate you guys as always. Brent, we got so much of the website right now. Spring practice starting on Monday. We got hoops in the SEC tournament this weekend with Grant and Rob. We got recruiting with Matt and Austin. Baseball starts SEC play this weekend in Alabama. No better time than right now to be a member over at BallQuest.com.
That's right. I'm just riding all your boys' coattails, as I always do. But they're long coattails that produce a lot of great stuff for people out there to read and discuss and to view and all those things. So there's nothing slow about what's going on right now. It's a great time. And there should be, as Grant said in his soapbox, appreciate whatever's next in basketball. These next 2, 3, 4 weekends, whatever it is, appreciate every second of it because it's been a heck of a ride. You hope the ride doesn't end somewhere, but we all know in tournament basketball it's chaotic and crazy. But enjoy it. We're going to cover it every step of the way.
For Brent Hubbs, Grant Ramey, I am Eric Kane. A big thank you, as always, for joining us here on the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on BallQuest.